Heidelberg Catechism, Lord's Day 34, question 93. How are these commandments divided? Into two tables, the first of which teaches in four commandments what duties we owe to God. The second in six, what duties we owe to our neighbor. Question 94. What does God require in the first commandment? That on peril of my soul's salvation, I avoid and flee all idolatry, sorcery, enchantments, invocation of saints or of other creatures, and that I rightly acknowledge the only true God, trust in Him alone, with all humility and patience, expect all good from Him only, and love, fear, and honor Him with my whole heart, so as rather to renounce all creatures than to do the least thing against His will. And then question 95, what is idolatry? Idolatry is to conceive or have something else on which to place our trust instead of or besides the one true God who has revealed Himself in His Word. As we come into this section of the Catechism, our attempt to draw out particularly what the questions contribute to our understanding is going to run into a little bit of difficulty because many of the questions will become fairly repetitive. What does God require? Or when you come to the Lord's Prayer, even worse, what is the first? What is the second? What is the third petition? And in that case, obviously, the questions are functioning just as hooks or as reminders so that we know what we're supposed to be saying, what we're supposed to be thinking about. But they're pretty pro forma. They don't really contribute too much to the understanding of the question or to the understanding of the doctrine. Now, in this case, since it's the first time the word comes up, we can pay a little bit of attention to that word require in question 94. What does God require in the first commandment? And there's a couple of ideas that are baked into that particular form of expression. The idea of a requirement means that there's a moral obligation that's imposed upon us. It's not optional. It's not negotiable. It is what it is, and it needs to be heeded. But the constraint to do that, the constraint to follow that, is internal, not external. In other words, you're not forced by some outside pressure to avoid and flee all idolatry, sorcery, enchantment, and the rest. Rather, this is an internal pressure. If you know the Lord, if you love the Lord, the fact that He has expressed this commandment to us exerts a weight, a pressure on our souls so that we cannot be comfortable not complying, so that there's an internal desire as well as an obligation, a responsibility to comply. Now, that comment will apply to any of the commandments where it's asked, what does God require? Or even if that is phrased a little bit differently, this is the nature of God's law in general. It binds us, but it doesn't force us. It constrains us to obey, but it's a conscientious constraint, not an external compulsion. On the one hand, that's the dignity of being given the law of God. We're held responsible, and then we ought to use our wills and our minds and all of our being in service to this law. But we're not overwhelmed. The law of God, in that sense, is different from the law of gravity. If you can break the law of gravity, by all means do so. It's not wrong, but good luck with that. With the law of God, you can break it. You can act against it. But you shouldn't. It's your dignity as God's creature. It's your freedom as God's redeemed image to act in conformity to His law. Now, there's also a couple of other questions. How are these commandments divided? Where you see the comprehensiveness of the Ten Commandments, that they address more than one thing. There's the question of what is idolatry, which sets before us what it really means to acknowledge the Lord to be our God. But these definitional questions, the meat of them is found in the answers. So we'll leave it there for today, and in future Lord's Days, we'll have to look a little bit at the answers as well as at just the questions, given their nature.